outside the box of religious obligation lies a road less travelled, into the heart of the father's affection. Slinging freedom all over the place, this is the God Gene. The God Gene. The God Gene.
Well, this morning, and it's early morning, I'm in Keller, Texas.
Yes, you are.
And that's the voice of Tracy Levinson. Hi, Tracy.
Hi.
Welcome. This journey we're on at the moment started here in this area, Coffeeville, I think.
Colleyville.
Colleyville, sorry.
You just need some coffee.
I don't drink coffee, so it's not going to help. Colleyville, I was out here with Tracy and husband Bruce and some people, and it's where I met Arnita, where the whole language of healing stories continue to unfold. And now we're out here opening up the book. We're launching the book this weekend, and Tracy's been part of this. In fact, she's going to MC the event today.
That's right.
Give us all that stuff. So.
And then yesterday, you did an all-day workshop.
Yeah, how was that?
Oh, my goodness. For me, it was really profound.
Wow. And it wasn't, I didn't do it. The three of us did it, and had 25 so people there just working through the language of healing and trying to start a conversation that hopefully ripples out through the cosmos somehow. So.
Yeah, I really did appreciate how people were vulnerable and coming to the table with humility and just really looking for practical tools of how to not just avoid conversations that are difficult where people might disagree, but how to actually enter into those conversations with dignity and your main theme, which is to continue to look for, is there a possibility we can come towards the common good?
Yeah.
I love that.
Is that a value? A value beyond just what I prefer and
right.
what I would want my nation to be? Is
right.
there something that says, hey, how can we all share the space and you get what you need and I get what I need too? So anyway, yeah, it was a fun day. And we've got everybody here, not just the authors, but we got the publisher here. And then our editor was there. She's been my editor on every project except one in the last, since The Shack. And man, love Kate, love having her here. And so now we get Tracy. I've been wanting to talk to Tracy just because we intersected on something a few weeks ago. She may not even know about, but we were both talking to different couples who were trying to avoid having sex until marriage.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, man, I was giving some counsel to somebody, and then I saw something you posted on Facebook about it. And I went, oh, this is Tracy Levinson. This is the person we called in the past the sex lady. And, which is awkward when she's actually sitting in the room with me. But yeah, and you're one of my favorite podcast people. You just are. And I say it to all my podcast guests. I do
nice.
It to, I do it to my grandkids. You're my favorite grandkid. And they all smile at me. Don't tell the others. And so hopefully they're not talking to each other, but they're all my favorites. And I have lots of people I love having on this podcast. But Tracy, you're one of them.
Yay.
Enjoy talking to you and
love
glad
it.
To have you here. You don't longer live in Colleyville.
I don't.
You moved away.
I live near the Austin area in the Texas Hill Country where it's beautiful. People don't realize it. There's hills. There's wineries. It's just this beautiful, beautiful area. And I can't wait for you guys to come visit sometime.
Oh, well, I'll try and get Sarah to come with me down there. And Bruce is just recovering from some surgery, so he's going through some health issues.
He did. He had a cancer diagnosis and has been through a very intense journey. And it's been hard because we had this dream and we are building this business in the Hill Country. And on our way there, he got a cancer diagnosis and we left our community. And so it's been a real challenging season for us, for sure.
Yeah, we could do a whole podcast on that right there. I know I looked at you as a podcast where we don't talk about sex
because
there's so many things that you add to the dialogue, not just with us, but all kinds of ways that God shares your life with other people. And but the whole idea of you aim at something because you really feel like God's put this on your heart,
mm-hmm.
and then it goes awry. You're
mm-hmm.
not going to get there. Just like the publishing company we started to publish The City. And then The City went away. So it's not a book we got to publish. And so the language of healing, I would never have started that company to do language of healing because I could have done that through Livestream, I think. But now we had the apparatus for a book that I think is going to be bigger than I thought it was because the pre-sales and stuff, I mean, everything's really amazing with language of healing. So now I'm thinking, well, we needed that apparatus. I wouldn't have built it if we hadn't had The City. That goes away. And I think I've seen that a lot in my life where you think you know what's coming, and that's not what comes, but then it turns around and gets used in even a better way than you were originally thinking. So
I think it's interesting, and I don't know this, but if God knows our hearts and He knows our motive, well, there's that.
Yeah.
But our motivations, and so it's interesting that He would know you enough to know that you wouldn't have been motivated to start the publishing company for just this project. I just think it's interesting. I don't know. All I know is the bottom line, and we're going to talk about sex because it is my favorite topic. But it really is.
Okay. Wow.
But is that I have just in this season had to land on just trusting God. Hmm. And that has been, and not understanding,
yeah.
but literally just
yeah.
because, you know, where else do you go?
Right. We're going to let it play out. It's got to play out.
Right.
And we don't know now what we're going to know a year from now.
That's right.
Like, I wouldn't, you talk about, you know, God knowing that I wouldn't get that. And I love how God appreciates how stupid I am. Because we wouldn't be living where we are in Los Angeles if it hadn't been for God saying to me, we sold a home and Sarah and I were looking for where to move. And God said, this is between Sarah and me. So go wherever she wants to go. And I never told Sarah that. I didn't tell her, you're going to do this for God. I just said, I kept asking her, where do you want to go? Where do you want to move? And I had my vote and I was kind of suggesting things. And she kept targeting an area that I wouldn't move to for anything. If God hadn't told me, go wherever Sarah goes, I wouldn't have ended up there.
Okay, this, do you see, this, it almost makes me cry. That's oh. just so sweet.
Oh, it was just, it was
It's so
scary.
Sweet of God, and it's sweet of God, it's sweet of God for Sarah, too. And look what she yeah. created. If, I don't know if you've any, I don't know if she would be, allow you, I don't know if you've done this, but her garden is.
Everybody knows about a garden.
Okay.
I have pictures up.
You have pictures.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, he'll have to do it on this podcast. It is magical. It's magical. I can't wait to go someday. And so the Lord, it's funny that he would have known, since he lives outside of time, that he was also going to create that.
Well, it's that. It's I met Brad 6 months from moving to that area.
Wow.
And all the things that Brad and I got involved in together and the friendship that we share. And there's just so many things that happen because I live in the Los Angeles area, which we try and get my dad to move because he's alone now. We'd love you to come down. My brother lives nearby so dad could have some, you know, whatever. And he's just like, I'm not getting off my mountain. And I understand it. I've got to say, I never wanted to move to L.A., but that's my grandkids are 15 minutes away. I mean,
wow.
there's so many things that happened because Sarah really wanted to move there. And it was about Sarah. It wasn't about me. And one of the things God said to me is, Sarah spent 25 years chasing the visions of your heart, and I want you to spend the next 25 chasing hers. And
so, how old were you when this happened?
Oh, gosh, 47, probably.
Yeah. Takes sometimes men a while.
So, unfortunately, God
no
knows
offense,
how stupid
that is so terrible to say. I'm sorry,
God
men.
Knows how stupid we are.
I'm just kidding. I don't think you're stupid. Some men just need a little
well,
more time for
the culture. Sarah and I both grew up in the woman would be the helpmate.
Yes,
and so it's all about the man's vision. It's all about what he's doing, and she's just supporting it. And I, you know, you don't see through that until you see through it, and then you go like, that is the stupidest thing. But in the middle of it, you don't see it.
Mm-hmm.
So that's how Sarah was wired, and that's how I, you know, I kept talking about us being partners. I didn't do the helpmate language. I don't have a sermon out there, even on an old cassette tape that talks about the woman being my
don't
helpmate.
Look for it.
I always saw the two became one. I always saw that. And so we kept trying to get there, but Sarah was so whatever Wayne wants, Wayne gets, that she would, when I'd ask her a question, she'd try to anticipate what I would say. What I would want, and then she would say that. And I was always, it was always funny. Man, we're so one. Every time I give Sarah a choice, she chooses exactly what I would have chosen.
This is amazing.
I had no idea that she was actually doing that until God unpacked that. And now Sarah gets to be Sarah, and we're on a very different journey. And I'm the notebook language has been something that's always, that's worked into my soul. When I get before God one day, I want to hear him say, you've loved a woman well.
Wow.
And I hope Sarah says that.
Yes.
I haven't loved her well her whole life.
Right,
I have
right,
not,
right.
But I'm learning to love her well.
Wow.
And if that's the culmination of my life story, that'd be a worthy one.
Yes.
Right there.
Yes.
So anyway. So we were talking to some kids, different ones, about premarital sex, having a difficult time waiting in a culture that treats sex very casually. So hey, why not? Everyone else is doing it. And I loved what you said, because he was wanting encouragement to wait, the person writing.
Yeah,
I don't
it's
know about
pretty precious. Writing. Yeah, it's a young man that I've known most of his life, and he is sincere. He really is crazy about this particular person, and his desire is to wait. And I also have several single friends who are in divorce situations, and I want to talk about that too, because they're in the online dating world. And it's funny because it's the same, they're all dealing with the same struggle. But I think what you liked about what I was kind of pointing this young couple towards is they wanted me to help them with their boundaries.
Yeah.
And I just kind of rolled it all back and just said, let's talk about the why.
Yeah, it's not the what. It's not the rule. It's the why. Why? What's God in mind? Talk about that. Because I thought I sent that paragraph. I'd already had my exchange with this other couple, and I saw your paragraph you posted on Facebook. I copied, pasted it, and sent it straight to them. I said, this is good stuff. Think this through. And they said it was really helpful to them.
Good. Yeah, my question for them, if they wanted to play, it was more like a, you know, just, you want to play with me? And I'm happy to play with you. I'm not a guru. I don't have all the answers, but I'm happy to dialogue with you on this. And my question for them was, why do you want to have boundaries in your relationship in the sexual area? And I guess I go to a bigger premise. So when I was a young woman, I did not have a relationship with God. I did not. He obviously knew me, created me, loved me, but I did not come into a knowledge of him, or whatever you want to call that.
Yep.
And so I had nothing to navigate with. And my parents we didn't talk about it. And so the message I picked up, which was accurate or not accurate, was, well, you probably shouldn't, but you probably will. So if you're going to, you probably need to be smart about it and don't get pregnant. That was really the philosophy that I had. And I did have young friends who had parents who tried to encourage them to protect themselves in the sexual area. And I remember being jealous and feeling like it's not true, but I felt like their parents maybe loved them more than mine did, or thought they were more it was more like I thought that they were more precious than me. Like, well, that is a person who's like, but I'm kind of like, I don't know. It was this weird sort of thing. And so I came promiscuous, really, you know, I had sex for the first time when I was 16, didn't even have a sex drive. My boyfriend kept pressuring me, and I just gave in eventually. And then I felt bad about myself. And then I was like, well, I've already blown it, which is typical girls. And so super promiscuous. And then what happened to me is I got married. I didn't know God. And then I came into a knowledge of this God and began to just kind of learn about him. And so what happened for me was I was kind of like, woohoo. And so my husband and I didn't know any better. So I know you laughed about this before, but like, even when we would be intimate with each other, sometimes we'd play praise songs, or sometimes in the middle of it, I'd pray. I didn't grow up in a religious culture. So right. I didn't know that my friends would think that was weird, that when my husband would be about to have an orgasm, I literally would pray that God would make it beautiful and he would bond us together. I would, like, the thought of not thinking of God and sexuality at the same time, like, there was no taboo for me. And so as I have navigated this, and so then I meet all these young couples and they're struggling in that area. And so I just kind of, again, you'd have to look at the breadth of the word of God if you think there's validity into it. And that's, everybody has to work that out for themselves. But as I looked at scripture, it looked like covenant, which is a promise, was something that God values highly and that it's a beautiful thing. And so in this, and I'm going to flip a little bit, but like for my single friends that say, well, I'm dating all these guys and they all think like, you've already been married, you already had kids, like, you should have sex with me. Like, I mean, that's expected. And I'm like, and I'm always like, ooh, a guy that thinks before covenant that it's not a big deal to have sex, I don't feel valuable. Like, I want to be safe. But see, in my brain, that same guy that thinks it's not a big deal before you're married to be really that intimate, where you can make a life. You can get a sexual disease. You can make a life. Lots of things. And it definitely is going to bring off oxytocin. You're going to bond with that person. But that same guy, if you're in covenant, might not think it's a big deal to break it when you're in it too. So I think that and I'm always looking for safety, but I just feel like there's, I know for a woman, it's like, it's not safe. So why, this young man, why don't you want to? It's not like, what are the rules, Miss Levinson, so God will be okay with me. Like, do you care about this girl?
Yeah, and what I like about it is it's not sex is dirty, which I think is what a lot of Christian messages are given to young people. Like, it's really the dirty thing. Like, you wouldn't pray during sex. You wouldn't think about God during sex. It's just kind of, God allows us to have sex because we have to have kids, but he really thinks it's weird. Instead of, it's a great, it's precious. And I love the emphasis on the reason you wait to put sex inside covenant is not because it's dirty. It's because it's precious.
Yes.
Yeah.
And because you're precious, even more.
Right.
I mean, the greater, and I have a friend who's single that she's hilarious because she'll date these guys and she'll, you know, there'll something will come up and she'll be like, okay, he's inviting me to go out of town for the weekend. I'm like, okay, you're not asking me my advice, but I'm going to give it to you. And it's like, just yesterday I said to her, the reason I want you to be so careful in this sexual area is because do you understand how precious you are?
Yeah.
Like you're worthy. You're actually worthy of a guy that would value you above him being able to have an orgasm and not even have a commitment with you.
Which tracked back to your pre-God days where you talked about you felt like they were more precious.
I did.
Because they, and maybe that's, I wondered how much of that is like the slut shaming we do promiscuous girls, even guys conquer and girls are, sluts in that language. But still, it goes back to the very beginning of, even though you didn't know God and even though there was no God thing to it, there's a sense of preciousness. There's a sense of value, safety, security. I think all that is what's so important and a foundation for a relationship that we've put this very beautiful, wonderful gift inside the covenant and even waiting for it. And then your wedding day is something entirely different because you haven't cheapened it by doing that earlier. You know what I mean? And I know for Sarah and I, we dated 3.5 years and it was not easy. It was not easy in moments
and
of
I'm
passion.
And I'm always like, good. When a couple tells me that when they're dating, I'm like, good. I'm glad it's not easy.
No, it's not easy. And waiting. And yet when you do, then the beginning of that part of your journey as a couple is just, I thought doubly, I've never met people who waited, who regretted it. I've met people who've gone at it too early that regret it. I've never met a couple that said, yeah, we were virgins when we got married and there's no regret. I mean, we explored that together and only with each other. And that's what we have for life.
And so for those like me, that's so not my story. What I love is the focus on relationship. And so that's this couple that I said, let's focus not on the what right now. We'll go there. Let's go there. Cause there's wisdom in that, but let's start with the why.
Yeah.
And it's because of God's great love for us, and we're so precious. And so what I love about God is that it doesn't matter whether I was inappropriate with 10 guys. I lost count. But let's say there was 10.
Let's just say 10.
Let's say 10. That's a good round number. If God is who I know him to be, I am what I got when I received him. It was total righteousness. I mean, like I'm clean.
Yeah, right.
Like, so sexuality, just because I'm precious, if I had sex, doesn't make sex less precious, doesn't make me less precious.
That's good. That's really good.
I'm precious.
Right.
That's why my married friends who are single, I'm like, no, you have a revelation of how precious you are and that you want to be with a guy that thinks you're that awesome. But so I just love that there's no shame in sexuality. I get frustrated about this. It's like, there's no shame in money. It's just something we use. There's no shame in food. There's no shame in a glass of wine. But I am never made to be a slave. I am not made to be a slave. And so I'm free. And I'm free to treat myself with dignity and to want the best for myself. And at any moment, like let's say someone's involved in porn right now, or they're dating some person or sleeping with them. Like,
they're just being casual in their weekend relationships.
And so there's no condemnation in this, but I'm not going to lie. If I know anything about the heart of the Father, he wants better for you than that. He wants better for you than that because you are precious.
Yeah.
And I get the phone calls of the girls that say, Ms. Levinson, I think I have a sexual disease. Like, this is not a joke.
Right.
God wants better. Think about the picture of man and woman in covenant. If that's not broken before or after, you can't get a sexual disease.
Yeah.
That's not for us.
Right.
That was not God's heart.
Yeah. And I love that thing about it just not being something that you follow a rule. And if you've broken the rule, you might as well just keep breaking it because you've ruined the whole thing. But if in fact you've had some failure in this area of your life, you can recapture the preciousness. You just can't. It's not like, well, you violated it. It's all over for you now. I love that. And I love the idea. This is what I passed on to this other couple I was talking with. You cheapen God's heart when you substitute a rule for a reality. Instead of getting deep inside who God is and why he's asked us to live this way, you just make a rule. And now God's the divine cop. He's got a stop sign up, and he's gonna give you an STD if you do it, because that's what you deserve. And we get God in such weird space, and why so many young people who've been through the whole chastity movement of promising chastity at 12 and then violating it at 14 and 16 and 18, some of them get to actual marriage, and they're talking about the whole dysfunction of sex has been so dirty in their mind since their adolescence.
Which is a lie.
That on their honeymoon night, they can't have sex together because it feels so dirty. And that's how they've guarded themselves against it. Sex is really dirty. It's perverted. It's sick. And then you just don't get married and turn that on.
What a lie.
If it's not a gift from the beginning, a gift from God, you know, it's God's gift to humanity, right? And if you don't start there, even where it's gotten twisted and broken in your life, it's still God's gift. And God's inviting us now, live in that gift the way I've made it for you, which should be even more special.
This is what's been really a weird thing for me in this season. So my husband is very gracious and lets me be pretty open about things. And this cancer journey where he has cancer is in his private area. And he just did a surgery. He just had a surgery that literally, I don't know that we are ever going to be able to be intimate in the way that we've been as a couple. And it has caused me, I'm the sex lady. I mean, sex is my favorite thing with my husband and Kevin.
Thank you.
And, but I have had, that's been a real sorrow and a real grief for me. And it's been really interesting. And I remember, because I don't view sex as a physical thing, absolutely physical. It's fabulous. God's great. He's so fun. But I really have meditated upon, I don't know, the spiritual components of it and the emotional, like how amazing that it's so simple, man, woman, puzzle piece together. And then God does certain things that it's a real thing. Like that's why women who have sex with a man, just because I counsel to women, I'm sure men too, but they can't break up with a guy sometimes if they need to, because they had sex with him. It's not just a mental, your body bonds. There's some bonding things that happen in your brain and in some, you know, your oxytocin, all that.
Right.
God created that to bond you to your spouse.
Right.
So anyway, I had some people who probably good intentions, but when I was really struggling with the journey of my husband, because this cancer treatment, he had to make choices. And he made choices that definitely were ones that meant that he might not be able to be intimate with me in that way again. And as I was wrestling with it, I had some people in my life that knew I was wrestling with it, and they had good intentions, but they reached out to me on their own and their subtle agendas and basically said, I can't believe that you're putting your husband's life over having sex. Like just the fact that I would have in any way encouraged him to maybe do a little different path or just any sort of shift. And I remember laying in bed one night and it was beautiful. And I was like, God, because I knew the Lord knew my heart is that. And I laid in bed and I just said, God, why is sex so important to me? And I mean, this was just a thought, you know, how does God speak to his kids?
Right.
But this was the phrase I heard. And not that God can't supersede this. People have become paraplegics, and God, we're going to talk about that. We're going to talk about that because right. I'm going to have to think about that. But I felt in my spirit a sentence that I don't think I could have come up with on my own. And this is what I felt like I heard. A marriage without sex is like the church without communion. And it was like, Tracy, sex is really important to me too. Mm. And so I love that because he knew that I knew about, I've been meditating on communion and how it's so cool that we have this bread and this wine and it's these things that, you know, was a normal thing. We ate bread, we broke bread, we drank wine and every time you do this, remember me. And he was saying, every time you do this, you little human who has hunger needs, every time you do this, think about the fact that I love you so much that I sent my son and I broke my body for you. And this is a new covenant that makes you permanently pure. And that it's you know, this beautiful thing. And so I think of, that's what I felt like in the whole point of marriage and sex and why that's so beautiful is that's, it, you know, again, if you're a Bible person, it's like, that's the picture of Christ in the church.
Yeah.
Sex is the picture, and how cool that God for some reason chose marriage, because think about that puzzle piece thing I just said, the intimacy, like, you know, the fact that like your whole, like, I love listening to what you talk about because you've simplified the journey of being loved by God. Like, what is it like to be intimate with God? And I think what you're talking about with Sarah and how you've moved towards loving her well, and I think sex, and again, as we get older, it changes. And in a medical situation like I'm in, it's going to have to change. Like it's already changed. Like it's right. changing. But still, what a beautiful picture of the intimacy that there's nothing closer than when a man and a wife are together in covenant and in their sexuality. It's such a picture of intimacy.
Yeah.
And it's a beautiful thing.
And the two really become one reality.
Right?
For that. Yeah. For those moments. And then that's emblematic of the larger relationship, I think, that goes on.
And that's so much bigger than the culture of, oh, you're on online dating. I've gone with a guy twice. He expects me to have sex with him.
Right. And if I don't, I could lose the relationship. And yeah, it's so sad that we've so cheapened what sex is in our culture, the way we play with it in movies and TV shows. And we just have cheapened to it's just an amusement. It's not something more significant and more real. It's just a physical, bodily amusement. And you get your endorphins and then you just go on to the next. That's sad. It's hard. The other thing I want to talk to you about, and I don't want to get too far down this road, because another conversation I had recently with some young guys, are just the whole idea of what is lust versus self-sexual gratification, the term people cringe at and you say masturbation. Is it always sin? And the conversation we had, I just love it, because I think we were taught as young kids, I think in religious constructs often, you know, Jesus said to have lust is the same as having adultery. And most guys define lust as, I thought about sex and I thought about a woman, so I've committed lust. And so, as one person said, masturbation is always lust. And so we've created this whole evil environment, even around something that Scripture, as I read it, does not forbid.
It's silent.
And it's not like, well, they didn't deal with it back then, right? That would be absurd to go, well, they never did it, so it didn't have to. Scripture never addresses that there's sin involved, that there's healthy ways to release sexual tension and desire. Now, I agree with Brad. I think sex is a team sport.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It is a team sport. Yeah. The fullest expression of sexuality, but in the sense that, man, to relieve, to express something when you don't have the way to give it an outlet. Mm-hmm. Now, I always say if self-sexual gratification, masturbation takes affection away from your spouse, then that's a deal.
Yeah.
Right? If it's putting you in the whole pornography, lust, that whole thing, that's a deal.
Yes.
And it's not, well, you broke the rule. It's just a deal.
You're not made to be a slave.
You're becoming, that's a good word. Yeah, go ahead. But when I talk about it with guys, is it just you see a pretty woman go by and you appreciate the beauty like you'd appreciate a sunset? Have you lusted? Most guys will say, yeah. And you add that to something I said that I saw in a Christianity Today article a while ago. When you ask a man how he's doing spiritually, what he always hears is, how am I doing sexually?
Oh my gosh.
And that never leads
to
a good end. Yeah, and I go, that is so true. When you ask a man that, he's thinking, because men think about sex every 7 seconds or whatever the thing is. And it is often. I'm a man. I get it. So if when I ask you how you're doing spiritually, your next thought is, how I'm doing sexually, and have I had a lustful thought? And because just if you appreciate beauty, it's lustful. If a woman has dressed provocatively, which women do in our culture all the time, and you notice, which guys notice, whether it's, you know, some part of the female form that is something alluring to you.
Or lovely.
Lovely. So you've appreciated or even allured a little bit. Does that cross the line of lust? And the church has taught yes.
Okay, I have to go back. Two steps. Got to go back.
Wait, go ahead.
Okay, so we're first back, but you're not going to answer it, is where I want you to define lust for me from what you think it is. But before you do that, I want to go back to the foundation, kind of like with these kids, of what are the rules, but why.
Yeah.
So the foundation here would be, let's just for a second talk about sin, because you're less sin. Okay, first of all, sin is what we do that hurts us, right? It hurts us. Sin's already been taken care of. If you're a Christian and you believe in Jesus and you believe in the cross, sin's been taken care of.
God's no longer
there's no condemnation.
Trespasses against us.
Right. So basically, at this point, God gives us counsel. And so if we don't follow his counsel, it's just a lack of faith. It's a lack of trust. So if God's counsel to me would be, if I'm a man and God says, don't lust after, you know, women, I'm not going to, if I view that in any way through the lens of condemnation or that I'm going to be dirty, I've already missed the gospel. It's like, I don't even give a crap about, I don't even care about, at that point, I don't even care about the lust or the, I don't even care. I just like want to go back and spend a whole day going, do you get the gospel?
Right.
Do you understand the gospel? Like, that's done. So if everything left is, in terms of the sin department, is just you're going to hurt yourself and you're going to hurt other people. And if the definition of love, God is love, love protects, God loves me so much. He doesn't want me to hurt myself. And so for some reason, if lusting is going to be hurtful to me or hurtful to someone else, then the lover of the universe, which you go around the country or world talking about, it's like the lover of the universe is trying to love me and protect me. So it's like, I got to get that lens first. And then what I want is for you to define for me, if I'm going to have the framework of that, this is a loving thing and God loves me, he's given me advice. Then if God says, don't lust, tell me what lust is and how am I hurting myself with lusting?
You're asking me.
Yeah.
we talked about it in a podcast recently with Bob Stamps, and his definition of lust, which I like, is really the obsession and the specific, I imagine myself with that woman or that image. So it's, I would if I could. If it was available to me, I would, and I'm focused on that. And now I've taken myself down some kind of fantasy road that isn't real. And then I'm not operating in the reality of not just I have very normal human desires and affections and attractions, but now I would actually...
Because it's a choice. Once you take it to where you're really allowing yourself to go down a scenario, it's a choice.
It is, to some extent. But it's also, it's focused in a way that is going to create the harm, both if it's a real person I know but don't have that relationship with, that's going to be a problem. It, I think for men and pornography, I think you can make the argument with pornography on not even on the sexual side of it. It's on the objectifying of women. It's on the imagine your daughter doing what you're watching. And if you saw women as the beautiful, precious sisters that they are, you couldn't enjoy pornography.
Mm-hmm.
You couldn't. So there's a twist in how you view women. I think that's the problem more with pornography than the fact that, you know, because for most guys, it's simply I'm looking for something to excite me so I can get a hit, and then it's done. I go on with my life, and so I get it. And yet, for most women, when you hear a wife who's found out her husband's doing pornography, the destruction it's done to her, and how unloved she feels, and unvalued, and unsafe. All those things.
I have an encounter kind of with what you're describing. So I had a situation with a couple friend, and the husband would always talk to me about like football and the school and church, and but I always felt uncomfortable. But I always felt like I must be crazy because he was so nice. Hmm. But I always like, and I'm not kidding you. At one point, I would leave a sweater in my car, and I would wear it. But and something happened one day where some stuff came out that there were some issues there, and. And I'm not a very confrontive. I know I'm a very bold person.
I was going to say you're not.
But I'm not confrontive about. I wouldn't be confrontive in situations like this.
That surprises me.
Yeah, it's because it's and so because there's a vulnerability as a woman that we feel in the sexual area. There's just a vulnerability there. It's uncomfortable. And one day I was talking to him and he was staring at my breasts, and I literally said to him, "Are you staring at my breasts?" And like. Maybe I'm so bold in this podcast, you think, oh, you're the type of person that would do that. I'm not. I'm more the type that would just gently kind of avoid in that situation because I don't feel safe. And he admitted that that was true, which I appreciated. But I can't describe for you, because I had been friends with this person for years and I'd felt uncomfortable for years and not trusted my uncomfortableness. Mm. And I realized that the possibility existed that he probably had done what you're talking about, the lust part.
He had fixated.
Not just said, wow, my
you know, my wife's friend is pretty, you know, she's fearfully and wonderfully made. And wow, she's, you know, whatever. I'm sure she's hot with her husband, you know, or something, like maybe you let it go. But I'm just, for me as a woman, it made me feel like I wanted to run away and never see him again, which is not God's will because he's my brother in Christ. Does that make sense? I just wanted to run for the hills and not ever have to encounter him. And in some ways I've done that.
Well, it makes sense to me.
Okay.
That you become unsafe in a relationship because someone has a fixation on some part of your body or some part of you as a person. Or one of the things that I also talked about recently with someone is when the wife has a concern about a relationship a man has with a woman, mm-hmm. or like you're talking about the other way, woman with the man. And Sarah and I heard early on in our marriage that, and because Sarah's not a jealous person, like mm-hmm. if I'm talking to you, Sarah's not.
Right.
We can walk down the street and there's a, when we're young marriage, and there's a woman coming at us, and Sarah would go, well, that's disgusting. I go, what are you talking about? Because I'm not looking like mm-hmm. that. And she goes, that woman's not wearing a bra. And so she draws my attention. Sarah's never been insecure in that sense. We've always been able to talk pretty openly about that. And so there's not a jealous bone in her body. She's not, if I talk to another woman, she's deceiving. But we heard, trust the jealousy of your wife. If Sarah has a problem with a woman relating to me, I'm to take it seriously.
That's good.
I was at my first pastorate when this happened. And so every so often I turned to Sarah and I said, do I have any relationships with women that you have a red flag about?
That's so
we don't use the jealousy. Because it's not jealousy in terms of feeling threatened. It's the jealousy of my love for her and some woman's trying to carve in on that.
And it's a lack of peace. I mean, it ultimately would be from the spirit of like she would have a lack of peace about. And you don't always have to know.
And she has had that. She's named women to me. She said, yes, this one. And I'll go, you know what? You're right. There's something there. And then I just, it's not that I cut them out of my life, but mm-hmm. I take distance and I'm not with them apart from Sarah being with me with them. And I,
because you it's so precious.
Yes, exactly.
It's because protection, you just said protection. I cut you off.
Right.
But, and it's because it's so precious. What you have with her is so precious to you.
And even if I don't think something's going on there, the fact that Sarah is uncomfortable with it is enough for me.
Because you care about her
heart. I care about her feelings. Yeah,
I do. And it's interesting, you know, how the, I love this verse, but it's the one in the scripture where it says, guard your heart for it is the wellspring of life. And then right before that verse, it says above all else. And so I find my desire in life with my friends, with my husband, with my family, I want to be vulnerable. I want to be available. I really do. But above all else, guard your heart. Well, what's so beautiful is in any relationships, particularly marriage, but it could be any relationships, isn't it neat when I don't just have to guard my heart, but when you care about my heart so much that I don't even have to guard it when I'm around you?
Yeah.
It's such a luxury. You know, you can't be like that with everybody.
And I do that with a lot of couples I talk to. Do you feel like he's guarding your heart? Do you feel like she's guarding your heart? And if not, that's what we need to talk about.
Because you can't become one.
Yeah.
If you're protecting
guarded,
yourself.
Yeah, and if I have to guard myself from Sarah,
yes,
then that infringes on it. We're about out of time, and I want to ask you some mm-hmm. questions. Do you think lust is a problem for women as well as guys? We mostly talk about the guy context.
Yes, particularly in this culture, particularly the porn is a big issue with girls right now and young, and and it's very normalized in the culture, and sending nudies and all that is very normal.
Oh, it's incredible.
Very normal in the culture, but I think I just know as a woman. I think that the desire for, it's more emotional most of the time or physical. Yeah. And then just really quick, we're going to go back to masturbation really quick. I think that I had a conversation with
you. Is it a thing with women as much as guys? That's what I want to ask.
Yes.
You're mostly on your guys' content.
Yeah, but here's the difference. My son and I've had an argument about this because he used to have a porn issue. A woman can masturbate, and not lust. I've done it. It's a fact.
Right.
I mean, it's like it can be done.
Can't
my
men?
Son has told me a man can't do that.
See, and I don't
I don't agree with that. And neither did who's your publisher?
Kyle.
Kyle
Rice, who's a
counselor.
He's
a counselor, and he said he absolutely thinks so too. My son had a porn issue, so I'm sure his identification with that behavior was connected to porn.
Right.
So in his mind, he thinks you can't.
Right.
The Bible's so silent on the issue. We're not to be a slave to anything.
Right.
Like you said, in marriage.
And a slave to self-sexual. I mean, that's all you focus on, all you think
Absolutely.
About. Obviously, it's got to change.
But if your husband's and you're, you know, he's at right. war and you're, you know, I don't know. There's within marriage, there's all this creativity and there's all these.
And I even think about how do you know what turns you on with your partner if you haven't explored
your
sexuality?
If you don't know your body.
Yes.
Just the biggest issue is there's no condemnation. There's no shame.
Even if it's lust. That's the point.
Well, that's the point.
Even if it's lust. But there are ways, I think, that particularly, I mean, I had this discussion with a guy in England. I remember saying to me, because he was, masturbation is always wrong. And we had that big fight. And we talked about it. I said,
fight.
If that's true, then nobody's going to walk with God. No guys are going to walk with
yeah.
God. Because that's just something that men struggle with. And we were talking about it. And he wrote me a couple weeks later and he said, you know, I think I finally think it's okay. Masturbation is okay for a man when he's separated from his wife, when he's apart from his wife, like traveling or whatever. I said, I brought him back. I said, this is hilarious. So the only people that can are those that don't need to, right? And the people who have no healthy outlet for that sexuality
yeah.
other than that, they can't.
Yeah.
And particularly when people are marrying at much later ages, the whole idea that yeah. masturbation is some huge sin before God
yeah.
is, like you said, it denies the gospel, first of all.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of shame attached to it in the culture. So I get that guys feel shame about it.
And girls.
And we haven't mentioned your book. I mean, your book, we've mentioned before.
Oh, I have a whole chapter on masturbation in my book.
The book's called Unashamed.
Candid Conversations About Dating, Love, Nakedness, and Faith.
And I think it's a great read for everybody. I think particularly mothers wanting to find something to read with your daughters who are getting to that age. You couldn't have a better resource. It'd be good for fathers to read it with their boys too, actually, or mothers to read it with their boys.
Fathers to understand their daughters.
Yeah.
Or brothers.
Yeah.
To know how.
It's kind of written into that women's perspective, but it's bigger than that. The book is bigger than that for sure.
And lots of young men contribute too. So you
yeah,
to
and
that,
like I said, it's Tracy's favorite subject, so she loves talking
it's
about
true.
It.
It's true. I love it.
I appreciate the honesty of it. I appreciate the shamelessness with you approach, even failure in the sexual arena, because in the religious environment, sex is the worst thing. It's always the worst failure. I mean, you can lie, cheat, steal.
You can weigh 300 pounds.
yeah.
Have a drinking problem.
But lust, oh my gosh, that's it. Now God really hates your guts. And it's just not true. And God's wired us. God's given us this gift of sexuality. And it's a powerful, powerful thing. And it dominates so much of our thinking. The media uses it. Advertising uses it because it knows appeals to the depth of our being as a person. And God's in that. He created it. It's His gift. He knows how to help us deal with it in our own life so that we can put it in that space of, this is precious.
It's a
I'm
gift.
Safe inside this relationship. And it's a gift of great joy that God's given humanity. And we just celebrate it, not fear it so much, I think.
I love that. And
thanks, Tracy. I always enjoy being with
always.
You.
Always.
Love you. Love Bruce. Love your family.
Love
Pray
us.
God's goodness in every
Thank you.
Corner of your life.
Thank you. I love this book. I can't wait.
Thank you for traveling with us today on The God Journey. You can join this conversation by visiting thegodjourney.com.